This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
The people versus the corporation in America's Rust Belt, the coup in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then Frances Fox Piven reminds us not to mourn but to organize as she energizes us.
We move swiftly to Benton Harbor, Michigan, where there has been nothing short of a coup. First, Whirlpool controlled it, and now there is an emergency financial management law that has installed an accountant, Joe Harris, who was dubbed an emergency manager, to control the city. He has the right, among other things, to tear up all labor contracts. We're going to hear right now from Reverend Edward Pinckney, community activist and leader in the fight against the takeover of Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it. It's an honor to be on your show. I tell you, I'm excited.
I'm excited to have you, and of course, frightened in many ways, but we do need to hear what's going on in Michigan, what's going on in Benton Harbor, because it is a harbinger, no puns intended, of what, if it succeeds there, can and is beginning to happen in other parts of the country. So why don't you first tell us about the story of Whirlpool in what is an overwhelmingly African-American town in Michigan.
Absolutely. Whirlpool started this takeover in the year 2003. What I would do, I would go to the city council, and I warned them exactly what was going on. I said, what they're doing now is illegal. They're positioning themselves to take over the whole city of Benton Harbor and drive all the African-Americans out of the city. I call it gentrification. I said, this is exactly what happened. So during that period of time, the newspaper demonized me. They said I was a terrible person, that I was lying. And yet and still, Whirlpool was behind this whole thing. Now today, year 2011, everything I said in 2003 has now became a reality. But let me go deeper. Now, the city of Benton Harbor is under martial law. We have our very own dictator. You cannot make a decision here. All the elected officials, including the mayor, has been fired. 8 commissioners has been fired. The reason why, if we had no lakefront land, there would be no EFM. EFM stands for Emergency Financial Manager. If we had no beach here, there would be no EFM. If we had, they just built this Jack Nicklaus signature golf course. If there was no Jack Nicklaus signature golf course, there would be no EFM. Now what they want to do, they want to make sure they get all the land around the water. We have a high school here that's around the water. And what they're trying to do now, they're trying to figure out a way how they're going to get that now, since the world know what they're trying to do, how they're going to get it without the world knowing about it. We're in what you call a situation that only the public, we need folks from the outside to come in and say, hey, we're not going to take this mess no more.
Well, let me stop you before we get to that, because I want to go back and understand more carefully the role, to begin with, that Whirlpool played. You'd think Whirlpool, hey, that's a good thing. There's industry in and around Benton Harbor. It's giving people jobs. So what's wrong with Whirlpool? What did they do to help usher in and support this emergency financial manager?
The first thing they did, they started outsourcing all the jobs. Once they started outsourcing the jobs, all the factory jobs, they only hire 1% of the residents that live directly in Benton Harbor anyway. And most of those was in the manufacturing job. They closed the last manufacturing plant in March. So now they have no manufacturing plant. They've been doing several things. One of the things, they pay no taxes here. Number two, they won't pay their water bill here. They use $500,000 worth of water and refused to pay. The city asked them just to pay $172,000, and they refused to do it. The main problem that we had here, that we have today, is Whirlpool. And every time you ask them to do something, they always threatening to move. And my thing is this, Whirlpool, you're nothing but a cancer. We want you to move out of here. They have destroyed more lives here than anything else. They control everything in this city. The hospitals, the courthouse, everything that you think of is controlled by Whirlpool. You can't work here without them but having some kind of input in it.
Now, the emergency financial manager system, as I understand it, Benton Harbor is the first town to be affected by it, but it's spreading throughout the rest of Michigan also. So why don't you tell us what that is and how you got caught up in that?
Here's the thing. How we got caught up, they said that we was $5 million in the red. But remember this, that was not a lot of money. The county owed us $3 million that they was holding because they had not paid us the homeowner tax that goes through the city of Benton Harbor. They had not paid them that. And that's what it was. If they would have paid the money that they owed us, most likely we'd be $1 or $2 million in the red. But they held it up so they can make a decision to bring the EFM here. And here's the deal. The EFM, his job and his duty is not to sell off all the property here in the city of Benton Harbor of value. But that's what he's been doing. Anything of value here, he has sold off. So that's really not his responsibility. His responsibility is to take care of the city. But the city was not in a financial debt where you could say this is. Now he's claiming that we're $10 million in the red all of a sudden since he's been here. So I don't know what to tell you in reference to that. But the EFM, he got a job and a duty to the people, but he will not serve the people. He's serving Whirlpool. They're flying him all over the country in their private jet. So we're concerned about that.
Reverend Pinckney, I'd like to know, when you say they are outsourcing, in the context of Benton Harbor, who is Whirlpool outsourcing the jobs to, and what kind of jobs are we speaking about?
Any job that have to do with manufacturing are being outsourced. They're outsourcing them to Mexico. They're outsourcing them to anybody who's willing to accept them, anywhere to get them out of the city of Benton Harbor and replace the workers here. See, if you take away your way of income here, you almost have to leave to go find employment. So that's what that was all about. See, their job is to neutralize the people here, and you're not supposed to know that they're outsourcing their job. Like I told you before, we gave them a $12 million tax break for this factory they just closed. They said if they close that factory, if they close it before the time, it was a five-year deal, and they've closed the factory and now refuse to pay the taxes that they owe the people. See, that's the reason why Benton Harbor is in such a dire position. And they're outsourcing these jobs left and right. They're taking them to Mexico, anybody who will take them, rather than have them here in the city of Benton Harbor.
And Benton Harbor is the first case that we're hearing about where it's most developed. But this is something that's spreading all over Michigan, including the entire Detroit school system. What else do you know about this financial manager system throughout the state of Michigan?
Here's the deal. Benton Harbor is going to be the testing ground. We're going to see whether the people are going to stand up and holler in reference to the city of Benton Harbor. We're going to see what people are going to say. We know the residents are not going to say very much because they don't have enough resources to fight them. But will the rest of the state, will the rest of the country stand up for a city like Benton Harbor? You see, what they did first, before they do anything, they have to demonize you. Once they demonize you, saying that you're such a bad city, you're terrible at this. Whirlpool is saying that we're going to save Benton Harbor by making this a resort area and giving everybody here a service job. What they're saying, they're taking you straight back to slavery. That's what they're saying. But we don't know. It's just here in Michigan the way they go. They have trained 400 EFMs in training right now. 400. Not 200, not 300, 400. They are in training right now as we speak. To me, that's a major problem. Because if we allow them to get away with it here in Michigan, it's going to spread to other states.
Reverend Pinckney, I was also just wondering, since Ken brought up the issue of Detroit, we know that there were major amounts of, actually, I believe that there were 5,466 unionized employees who said that there was district-wide layoff notices that hit every one of the public school teachers and other personnel in the schools. What's happening with that as well?
It came in with the intention of breaking the school down, privatizing the education system. never in before in the history of mankind have every, well, he didn't lay the teachers off. What they did, they fired him. Because if you lay them off, you got to bring them back at that same salary. So what they did, they're going to renegotiate the contract with the union, which is union busting. This is what this is all about. So what they have done so far, everybody got their letter. It's at the end of the school year, you will no longer be an employee of the Detroit Public School System. You are terminated. If you want to come back and work here, you have to work under their rules. That's what it's set up to do. So
they're eliminating collective bargaining agreements, and I guess in Detroit, that's certainly the first test of this sweeping new powers of the emergency financial manager, just as in Benton Harbor.
But the difference between Benton Harbor and Detroit right now, you know, Detroit comes down and helped the city of Benton Harbor. Detroit is not hollering like they should. Every time I pick up the phone, I'm hollering about what's going on here in Benton Harbor. And now my job is to holler about everything that's going on in Detroit, because we're one whether we like it or not.
And what's the additional implication in Benton Harbor for the reality that this is an overwhelmingly African-American city?
Here's the thing. It's the overall thing here is that we know that it's 94% of the people here are African-American. Okay, 90% of the people live below the poverty level since Whirlpool, the biggest manufacturer here, outsourced the jobs. And we got over 70% of the people living here are unemployed.
And I know that you are fighting back, and indeed, I know you've been arrested over this, and that there is a major demonstration coming up to show the resistance of Benton Harbor's people to this horrific coup, if you will, the emergency management managers usurping local elected leadership.
Governor Snyder has been called, well, he was given the title of Grand Marshal in our parade. And what he's going to do, he's going to come down the street in his car, waving to all the people that live on the other side of the bridge. But when he come on our side of the bridge, we're going to be waiting for him. We're going to have signs. We're going to have everything that you can think of. We're going to make him as uncomfortable as possible. We're going to meet at City Hall, and we're going to march. We're going to meet the parade. And then we're going to line up on the sidewalk just to show them who we really are.
And what is the demand? What do you want?
First of all, we want to get rid of the EFM. That's the number one thing. Or the second thing, to restore our mayor to his position and our commissioner, the elected official. Nowhere in the world, not in the United States, where we're being taxed, we have taxation with no representation here. See, that's what they say. You got an EFM who was not elected, and he's calling the shots here.
And do you think this is all about economics, or is there something else going on politically with these takeovers? And as you said, hey, they're outsourcing jobs. So
yeah,
it's not about, or is it about the economics? How do you evaluate it?
Well, you know, I think we have to wear two hats on this. Politically, they're positioning themselves. And this is what I believe about everything. See, before a company like Whirlpool can actually take over a city, they have to position themselves. So when they do decide that it's the right thing to do, there will be no forces who will be able to stop them. You see, okay, economically, you start that first, you start squeezing the people. If you take away a man's bread, you take his bread away, either he's going to fight or run to get some more bread. Those are only two choices. I'm not going to let my family starve to death. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to make sure that they get what they need. And that's what it's all about here.
Well, we're with you. We'll find out more about what actually does happen as the residents appropriately rise up angry to reclaim their elected government and to tell Whirlpool, hell no, we don't want no golf courses. We don't want no stinking golf courses. We want our beaches. We want our land, and we want jobs. And this is really a seminal point of fight back for what is clearly happening around the country. And we thank you for staying the course, or as they say, forward ever and backward never.
Thank you very much for your leadership on this, because I really haven't heard anything out of Detroit, given the crisis they're going through on this also. So you spur them to action.
All right.
Well, we've been speaking with Reverend Edward Pinckney, a community activist and leader in the fight against the takeover of Benton Harbor.
With that are you on, boy? With that are you on, no matter what? With that are you on, boy? With that are you on, no matter what?
See, I gotta draw a line, I can't take it no more. If you ain't down with revolution, what you waiting for? Making money for suckers and not communities poor. Ripping flags off of coffers, man, this ain't our war. Colonized and terrorized by the world's biggest killers. The U.S. government, the biggest weapon and drug dealers. Filling prisons with children, incarcerating the future. MySpace and Facebook got us stuck on computers. Stuck on stupid music that's abusive to the shorties. And the nonsense that you're spitting, they just listen and absorbing. I've been dormant, I've been working, I'm a giant, I'm ready. I'm with the Apple in Oaxaca and we hold the machetes. I rock hard like Palestinian children holding slingshots. I'm with every single kid that's down for hip-hop.
Which side are you on? And we know the answer to that. And that was along with Rebel Diaz. And we're going to hear from Francis Fox Piven, a distinguished professor, legendary activist and writer who for more than a year has been accused by Fox News host Glenn Beck, who employs a graphic of a tree to do so, of being an advocate of violence and plotting since 1966 to overthrow the system. Piven now closes our programming as she addresses a national youth audience. You'll hear Piven reference the tree and rather use the metaphor to advocate organizing movements for peace and justice.
Martin Luther King said, when he spoke just hours really before his assassination in Memphis, that the strike of the sanitation workers in Memphis should be followed by a general work stoppage in the city of Memphis to complete the work of the civil rights movement. Well, we want to help complete the work of the civil rights movement and of the other movements in American history which have made our society more humane for people at the bottom of the society. And we have the tree of corporate destruction. Well, you know, we got this idea of a tree to help us understand our society. We got the idea of the tree from this guy on TV. I can't remember his name. But, you know, he got the tree wrong. And the reason he got it wrong, I think, he always says that he does his research in the wee hours of the morning all by himself. Well, that's not a good idea. We don't do our research in the wee hours of the morning all by ourselves. We draw on lots of our colleagues, scholars, experts, researchers, all over the country, all over the world, to try to understand what's happening to our society and what's happening to international society. And to do that, we want a lot of facts. For example, the tree is really the tree of American life. It's been poisoned. It's been polluted by corporate influence. Corporate influence that has grown over the last 30 years especially. And we've divided the main calamities that have resulted from corporate influence into two broken branches. One branch we called austerity. It has to do with the way the wealth and income of the American people has been steadily shifted to the very richest people in the country, with the consequence that all of us are poorer. We're working for less and paying more. And with the consequence also that these corporations, because they have so much money, they can put a lot of it into lobbying. They can put a lot of it into propaganda, and they have. more and more and more. And the more they put into influencing politics, the more the policies were to shove still more money into their coffers. And one way is by cutting taxes, cutting their taxes. How many of you saw the big GE story, which showed that GE had raked in something like $17 billion and paid zero taxes? Well, not only are they taking the money that we earn by lowering our wages and lowering our benefits, but they're taking the money that used to go to the public sector and used to constitute a kind of public sphere which improved our lives. We had schools that were well-funded. We had a safety net that took care of the unemployed and at least some of the poor. We had civil servants who ran services for our children, for our disabled, for our mentally ill. We had worker rights that were enforced by government agencies that had a budget. We had, as a result, a degree of equal opportunity in our society. That limb is crashing. The other limb is the limb of debt. And that debt also is owed to corporations, but particularly to financial corporations. Not all the big banks are there, but Goldman Sachs is there, J.P. Morgan is there, Bank of America is there. And we know what the banks have done to first sell funny mortgages to relatively innocent people, and now to drive those people into foreclosure, taking the little bit of wealth that they have accumulated in their homes, and also what the banks, the financial sector, has done to students. The tree of corporate destruction is endangering our future, the future of young people, the future of our society, the future of our planet. So maybe, just maybe, we are on the cusp of another great American movement, protest movement from the bottom. And you know, this protest movement, it could be working people and their unions. It could be students. It could be community people, poor people, black people, white people, immigrants, all of us together. And you know, it's going to have to be all of us together, because these movements, moments are heady, they are stirring, they're beautiful, but this time we face a very powerful and determined opposition. Don't mistake this corporate mobilization. They are insistent, they are greedy, they don't care about the future, because they're planning to live in Abu Dubai. Do they have children? I don't think so. Well, so it has to be a big movement. It has to be a strong movement. And maybe we can do it. Wisconsin was a kind of beginning, as was Ohio and Florida, and even now in the House of Representatives, because you know they have overreached. They have treated us as though we are entirely stupid, giving back tax money to corporations 1 month in Wisconsin, and the very next month taking exactly the same amount of money and cutting public services, pensions, and workers. So they've helped to dispel the fog of propaganda that sometimes keeps us quiet. But this great movement that I think, I hope, is beginning now is only one of a whole history of protest movements that has made America a better country, a more human country. You know, the right wing keeps talking about the founding fathers. They think the founding fathers are those Virginia planters and New England and New York merchants. They're not my founding fathers. My founding fathers are the artisans and farmers who, yes, joined the Revolutionary Army, but joined the Revolutionary Army to realize a vision of democracy, a vision of government that would be accountable to the people and to ordinary people. They were the beginning. And throughout the 19th century, it was movements of that kind that kept government honest, that kept it out of the total hands, total control of the robber barons, for example. The movements of the abolitionists, black and white, that finally got rid of chattel slavery in this country. The movement of farmers that may have been immediately defeated, but nevertheless did force their agenda into the progressive period. The movement of workers in the 1930s, the armies of workers in the 1930s, who not only walked out of their factories, but then walked back in and occupied them. The civil rights movement, that movement of incredible heroism, of incredible beauty, that forced the entire nation to realize the crime of American apartheid. And then finally, the economic rights struggles of the 1960s and 70s. Well, we've got to do it again. Those movements have been the movements that have forced the rich, that have forced business, that have forced corporations to pay attention to both the needs and the hopes and the dreams of ordinary people, of poor people and working people, of people at the bottom and the margins of the society. And now we're going to begin to create such a movement once more.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.